Hello and welcome to Radio Prague's Saturday show. I'm Maggie Lund and this is what we've got coming up in today's show. We've got another edition of Czech Life, and today's Czech history looks at the life of one of the 20th century's most famous detectives, Karel Kalivoda. And then we've got another edition from our archives series for you. But now it's time to start things off with Czech Life, brought to you by Jan Wellinger.
According to an old Czech saying, každý správný chlap, or every real man, should at some point build a house, father a son, and plant a tree. Viktor Filipi, our guest in this edition of Czech Life, isn't quite there yet in the first two departments, but the last category he knows a thing or two about. The 24-year-old, a student in his final year in the master's program in landscape architecture at Mendel University, began working on his family's garden more than 10 years ago. And just recently, it was voted by readers of IDNES as the country's most beautiful. When I spoke to Viktor Filipi, he told me more about how he got his start in gardening and landscape architecture when he was just a boy in elementary school.
When I was a kid, our family lived in a prefab apartment, but everything changed when I was 12. My parents bought a new home about 10 kilometers away with its own garden. It was a completely different experience. It spurred my interest in gardening and made me interested in studying horticulture at the secondary school level. Later, I continued in landscape architecture at university in Lednice.
Even as a boy, Viktor was allowed a greater deal of freedom than might be expected in designing the family's garden. He says that everyone in the family had largely industrial backgrounds, so he was given an unusually free hand.
It was a lot of work. When we first moved in, there were a meter and a half tall weeds that had to be removed. There was lots of digging of soil involved, creating heaps, changing the shape of the ground. A pool was added, as well as a garage, where equipment and tools could be kept. Of course, as a boy, my first attempts were basic, trial and error, but gradually I became more ambitious, drawing plans and so on.
Since the student of landscape architecture has come a long way, creating a garden full of nooks and crannies with artfully tended hedges, palm trees, exotic flowers including angel trumpets, soft grass, a small pond with water lilies, and a small grotto under birch trees where one can meditate. Photos of the work in progress won Filipe first prize and 30,000 crowns at IDNES in the website hobby section. The garden isn't even particularly large, says the designer, but is varied. It's all a question of aesthetics, balancing different elements to work together, variously receding or coming to the fore. And in effect, no garden is ever really finished. Viktor Filipi again.
Landscape or garden architecture is a bit of an unusual field. Like classic architecture, it also allows you to create. But we are working not with static elements, but with vegetation and also time. We have to project not only how things look now, but how they will look years down the line. If you take public spaces in cities abroad, I think greater care is taken in design. More consideration is given to how spaces serve individuals and how they develop. There is still a lot of room for application at home, and it's our job to show how things can appear over time.
There are, of course, many notable examples in the Czech Republic where gardeners and landscape architects' work is highly recognized, not least at the country's countless castles and chateaus. One example Viktor Filipi cites are the gardens in Litomyšl, in the Pardubice region east of the capital.
Whenever I visit Litomyšl, I am enchanted with how the town makes the most of its public space, how they work with vegetation. The monastery gardens are very famous, so for me visiting this town is really a matter of the heart. always find something new there that is inspirational, and they balance greenery and architecture really well.
Back home, Victor admits that his garden is a bit of an experimental space for trying out certain ideas. For one, there are limitations of space, then there are personal preferences. It led me to ask, when it comes to, for example, amateur gardeners, for whom their hobby is a source of pride and satisfaction, are there aesthetic rights and wrongs?
If someone enjoys gardening, to no matter what degree, I don't think it's appropriate to come along and say, I wouldn't do this or that, or to try and force something on them. Once you hire a landscape architect, it's a little different. You point out elements that work together and how the whole thing might look. If it's just a hobby for someone, it's hard to hold things against them, even if they want to include a garden gnome in their yard. Sure, garden gnomes are frowned upon, but so what?
A diplomatic answer, perhaps, by Mr. Felipe. All the same, understandable given how much some enjoy those clay gnomes or dwarves, banned or not, at the prestigious Chelsea Flower Show. Still, I'm not sure you'd find one of those little guys hidden behind a flower pot in his backyard. The budding landscape architect now has a year remaining in his master's. I was curious to see what was coming next, whether he was already working professionally or would weigh next steps once his studies were completed. And here's what Victor Filippi had to say.
There are a number of possibilities. One is continue studying and get a doctorate. Another is to try and get a job with an existing studio, to jump into the jobs market. School is good, but experience in the workplace is something else entirely. So I think it is a good idea to start working somewhere. Founding your own studio, thinking that you'll start pitching designs, is unrealistic, I think, a utopia. I think it's better to seek employment to gain experience and learn more by working with an existing company.
Victor Filippi, my guest there in this edition of Czech Life. And if you'd like to look at his work, please do visit our website, radio.cz, where you can see photographs he was kind enough to provide. That's at our website, radio.cz.
Now we're going back in time with Czech history. And in this edition, we look at the life of Karel Kalivoda, one of the most successful and famous Czech police detectives of the 20th century. A self-made man in principle, Karel Kalivoda worked his way up from an ordinary rank and file to the head of Prague's criminal police. He made a number of compromises to get there, but he always retained a degree of integrity unusual for the time and place. Jan Richter reports on Kalivoda's story.
The history of Czechoslovakia's communist police force abounds with stories of oppression and injustice. But a closer look reveals that even during the most difficult times, there were people inside the security forces who never betrayed their principles and remained focused on persecuting crime rather than the opponents of the communist regime. One of them was Karel Kalivoda, a criminal investigator whom his colleagues sometimes called the Maigret of Prague, after the famous fictional French detective. That is also the title of his biography by the historian Martin Kučera.
On byl nejenom vynikající kriminalista praktik. To znamená, že uměl vyřešit.
He was a great practical investigator. With his team, he was able to solve the vast majority of cases that appeared at that time. He was a very good organizer and manager of the criminal investigation service, and very importantly, he was the face of the criminal police. In the 1960s, when the regime was more liberal, he often appeared in the media and he opened the police up to the public, which was unheard of. And finally, he was a good writer and speaker. All this made him a great detective.
Karel Kalivoda, who was born in 1916 in the South Moravian town of Rosinov, only joined the police force after the end of the Second World War. Until then, he had a number of jobs, including a worker in a weapons factory, an office clerk, and he also ran the family tinsmith business for some time. but in 1946, mainly for existential reasons, he joined the criminal branch of the new police force in Mladá Boleslav in central Bohemia. After his initial successes, Karel Kalivoda was promoted and arrived in Prague in the early 1950s, where he solved some of his famous cases. As a member of the Communist Party, which he joined after the war, and thanks to his successes, Karel Kalivoda slowly moved up the police ladder and even studied in Moscow. But as Martin Kučera points out, he always preferred solving crimes to fighting the opponents of the regime.
Pokud byla kriminálka za v éře totality něčím československá výjimečná.
If Czechoslovakia's criminal police was outstanding in any respect during the totalitarian era, it was mostly because of him. Not only because of him, since crime solving is all about teamwork, but to a great extent because of him. His personal struggle for the autonomy of the criminal police from the regime was something exceptional and to this day underrated.
To byla veliká věc, dodnes nedoceněná, vlastně do vydání té knížky.
For many years after the communist takeover of 1948, Czechoslovak police relied on people who joined the force during the bourgeois First Republic. Karel Kalivoda, who by then had worked with many of them for years, resisted political pressure and protected his colleagues who didn't want to join the Communist Party.
Právě Karel Kalivoda je zajímavý tím, že držel ochranou ruku nad těmi buržoázními kádry.
It was Karel Kalivoda who protected those bourgeois members of his staff. For instance, he was a lifelong friend with the head of Prague's criminal police, Zdeněk Borkovec, whose brother Jaroslav was one of the first people executed in a political trial, even before Mladá Horáková. This is evidence of the fact that Karel Kalivoda thought and acted differently than many people in the police force at that time.
Než bylo v bezpečnosti tehdy běžnou normou.
In his biography of the famous detective, historian Martin Kučera described the conflict between Karel Kalivoda and the communist secret police, the STB. In more than two decades, the conflict was to end Kalivoda's career in the force, but in the meantime, he managed to fight off all attempts aimed at his removal.
To byl režim výrazně schizofrení. Na jedné straně,
the totalitarian regime in Czechoslovakia was to a large extent schizophrenic. On the one hand, the ruling party needed its secret police against what they called external and internal enemies. On the other hand, they also needed the criminal police because it always serves the regime too. Kalivoda had a long-term dispute with the secret police, which several times nearly succeeded in having him removed. But he always enjoyed the support of top Communist Party leaders, until 1966, when he was finally forced to quit as the chief of the National Criminal Police and became the head of its Prague branch.
Vedení celostátní kriminální služby přejít na vedení pražské kriminálky.
In the 1960s, Karel Kalivoda's independence went so far that he in fact interfered with the investigation of a political attack on the regime. At a time when the security forces still executed people who stood up to the regime, Karel Kalivoda saved the life of a young man who carried out an attack against the party's armed troops, called People's Militias.
Na výročí říjnové revoluce v listopadu 1960 uspořil 7.
In November 1960, on the anniversary of Russia's October Revolution, he planted a bomb in Old Town Square, which killed two members of the militias, which was a great shock. But what happened? One of the people at the rally called the criminal police, although the secret police would normally be the ones to handle it, since it was a political attack.
Pražská kriminálka měla přijet státní bezpečnost, protože se jednalo o politický delikt.
Karel Kalivoda and his team arrived at the scene, secured the remains of a bag where the explosive was hidden, but did not report the attack to the secret police.
Okamžitě nasedl do auta a hledal pachatele a rychle toho hocha dopadnul.
Kalivoda immediately began searching for the perpetrator and managed to arrest him within some 12 hours. He then handed the student to civilian prosecution, which most probably saved his life. He spent 8 years in prison before being pardoned in 1968, and he left for Canada. We can therefore say that Karel Kalivoda knowingly saved the young man's life.
Karel Kalivoda zcela vědomně zachránil tomu hochovi život.
Historian Martin Kučera, who as a student met Karel Kalivoda, says that his defiant nature and lack of respect for authority played an important role in his personal struggle against the secret police, although he certainly did not agree with what the young man did.
On ten čin určitě neschvaloval, ale že byl humanista. Že chtěl zabránit tomu, aby mladí.
He certainly did not approve of the attack, but he was a humanist. He arrested the young man himself to see what kind of person he was. When he found out he was a 20 or 21-year-old university student, he thought he couldn't hand him over to the secret police because that would be the end of him. He had sympathy for the boy, not his act, of course. Also, he enjoyed sticking it to the secret police because he was defiant.
The liberalization of the 1960s paradoxically ended Karel Kalivoda's star career. His backers among the political leadership lost their positions, and so did he.
No, velmi dlouho za ním stál osobně Antonín Novotný. Až do roku 66, kdy právě...
For a very long time, he was backed by President Antonín Novotný. But then in 1966, it became unbearable even for him because Kalivoda refused to crack down on students in Prague protesting publicly against the poor living conditions in their student halls. This was the last straw, and Kalivoda lost his position.
Veřejné bezpečnosti proti civilistům.
Karel Kalivoda remained a member of the police in less prominent positions until 1976, when he retired. Although he lost his personal struggle against the secret police, he remained loyal to the communist regime even after the Soviet-led invasion. Martin Kučera, the author of Prague McGray, says he never fully understood why.
Ta konfrontace s tím komunistickým režimem té státostrany.
The confrontation with the communist regime soon suggested it would not be that easy, but Kalivoda remained a member of the party, and he remained there even after 1968. I can only guess why he did so. I think he didn't want to leave the party because he felt that if he left, it would negatively affect the level of the criminal investigation he built up. We have to realize that at this time, Czechoslovakia's criminal police could compare with its counterparts in the West, and it was internationally renowned.
Pod jeho velením byla evropsky srovnatelná a že i na západě byla respektovaná.
Karel Kalivoda retired as a famous detective who earned the respect of many professionals in a number of fields. Martin Kučera's biography offers an interesting insight into the life of the McGray of Prague, whose life was proof that history can be much more complex than it appears.
And that edition of Czech History was first broadcast in September 2011. But now here's David Vaughan bringing you another edition from the archives.
On December the 29th, 1989, Czechoslovakia's federal parliament elected Václav Havel as the country's president. In one of the many paradoxes of the Velvet Revolution, this was the same communist-dominated parliament that had previously fought so hard to stem the flow of change.
Milí spoluobčané, 40 let jste v tento den slyšeli z úst mých předchůdců v různých obměnách totéž.
President Havel's first New Year address, broadcast on Czechoslovak radio 4 days later, was one of the most famous speeches of his career, and in many ways was a watershed in the country's history. He began with a quote that we featured in this program a few weeks ago, arguing that, contrary to the lies told by his predecessors, Czechoslovakia was far from flourishing. This set the tone for the speech, which was surprisingly somber given the euphoric mood of the time. Here is President Havel, some way into the address, talking on the legacy of communism.
Bylo by velmi nerozumné chápat smutné dědictví posledních 40 let jako cosi cizího.
It would be unwise, he said, to interpret the events of the last 40 years as something foreign, left to us by our distant relatives. On the contrary, we should accept this legacy as something that we allowed to happen to ourselves. If we accept that, we understand that it is up to us to do something about it. We cannot blame it all on our previous rulers. not just because that would not be true, but also because it could weaken the obligation which stands before each of us, the obligation to act independently, freely, responsibly, and quickly.
Totiž povinnost samostatně, svobodně, rozumně a rychle jednat.
But Havel's speech was not all so grim. Czechoslovakia had just been through some of the most dramatic and least predicted events in the country's history, and the speech captured something of the great surge of optimism that had come with that moment.
Poslední doba, a zvláště posledních 6 týdnů naší pokojné revoluce, ukázala...
The last few months, President Havel said, and especially the last 6 weeks of our peaceful revolution, have shown the huge human, moral and spiritual charge and the high civic culture slumbering in our society behind the obligatory mask of apathy. Whenever someone has said of us that we are like this or like that, I have always protested that society is a very mysterious creature, and that it is never a good idea to believe just in the face that it is showing at a given moment. I'm glad I was not mistaken. All over the world, people are looking with amazement at how these pliable, humiliated and skeptical Czechoslovak citizens, who had seemed to believe in nothing, found such an astonishing strength and wisdom within themselves to shake off the yoke of a totalitarian system in a completely decent and peaceable way.
Zcela slušným a mírumilovným způsobem setřást ze svých beder totalitní systém.
But even within this, his first speech as president, Václav Havel provoked controversy. He was widely criticized when he declared a sweeping amnesty for inmates of Czechoslovakia's jails. As someone who had himself spent several years behind bars, he argued that however serious crimes they may have committed, prisoners had been forced through a judicial system that was both corrupt and deprived them of their basic rights. And at the end of the speech, President Havel declared his intention to invite Pope John Paul II and the Dalai Lama to Prague. But more of that in next week's From the Archives.
And that was the final part of Radio Prague's Saturday show for today. But you can always catch all our programmes online again at radio.cz. And if you do want to get in touch with the show and let us know what you think, or if you've got any questions for us, you can do so by writing to english@radio.cz or writing to Vinohradská 12, 12099, Prague 2. But that's all for now from me, Maggie Lund, and everyone else here at Radio Prague. So thank you very much for joining us and enjoy your weekend.